We're bringing in another legend right now, one of the premier golf coaches in America, and he's a black man. And he did not start when Tiger Woods started. He's been doing this a long time. Kills me. People think they see you on the golf course, you Tiger Woods. Man, please, be quiet. Leave me alone. I want to introduce our next guest, former Big Ten Coach of the Year at Michigan State University, national championship winner at Stanford University, our good friend Sam Puryear. Coach, how you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? Great show so far.
All right, thank you.
Man, and we apologize. We went a little long with Mahmoud, but he was, just a special guy, and we appreciate him taking a few minutes out of his schedule to share with us.
The stuff he did back in the day to take a stance is fantastic, so I think it was worth going over, no question. I'm a fan of his as well.
we're fans of yours, Sam, and this is Masters Week, all eyes on Tiger Woods, and what do you think so far in his latest comeback, and how do you see this week going down at Augusta?
Well, first of all, I think it's amazing that the man has come back. I mean, that just shows you his level of greatness. I mean, he's done some things that so many people dream about. It also shows you that, think about it, this guy has changed his swing four or five times and has won at each step. Now he's overcome adversity essentially for the first time in his life, and the stuff he's doing now, to me, arguably makes him the best golfer of all time. But I'm really excited. I think this week at the Masters is going to be pretty special. As already, the ticket prices have already increased. They're so much more than they were last year. Sold out for some days. Plus, already, the weather's supposed to be good. So I'm anticipating some really good things.
So, Sam, let's say if he has that great time and wins the Masters, does this put him back on track to pass Jack?
I think so. As a matter of fact, even if he doesn't win this week and has even a top five, top ten, you would still have to think he has an opportunity to break Nicklaus's records, because I mean he's very close to resuming where he was. So I would not be the one to bet against him. I promise you that.
Yeah, and you know what? And we had a couple of months ago, probably 6 months ago, we had Cliff Brown on, the great golf writer for the New York Times, who covered Tiger in his prime. And this is before we even knew if Tiger was going to be able to play again. And Cliff was saying, hey, I'm never going to say never with this guy because I've seen him do too much. And I knew exactly what he was. Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, if he's able to get out there and tee it up, it's always possibilities. And especially at Augusta, where, you know, I think he could be competitive there for quite a while. Just like Phil Mickelson is going to be competitive there. You know, Phil is 47 and Tiger's 42. And, I'm going with the old guys this week, Sam.
Well, I'll tell you what, I shared a story with a guy the other day. It was kind of funny now, but I was with a guy the other day on the golf course, and I shared a story at 21 when I was working at Golf Digest. They asked me to interview a 16-year-old kid out in California. I said, hey, Sam, this kid is really, really good. So I interviewed this kid, and his name was Eldrick Tiger Woods. And during his phone call, he said, now, at 21, I had just graduated college, and I thought I had played pretty good golf and had shot some good scores and had seen great golfers. He tells me at 16, he says, well, you know, he says, I'm going to be the best golfer you've ever seen. I'll be the best golfer of all time. I'm going to change the world. So I got off this phone call. I'm living in Connecticut. I got off the phone call, and when I visited back to North Carolina, I told some of my neighborhood friends. I said, guys, I'll just talk to this guy on the phone. We did an article because at that time, Shoal Creek was the big article, was the big deal in PGA golf. And I said, I talked to a guy that told me he was going to change the world. And we all sat around and laughed because all we knew was Jack Nicklaus and the Tom Kites and the Arnold Palmers. Tiger was a wonder kid, and he's done some things that I guess only he and Earl knew that he was going to do. And his career to this point has been absolutely phenomenal.
So Sam, you don't remember seeing him on the Mike Douglas show back in the day?
Oh, absolutely. But seeing somebody on the show as a kid is a lot different than seeing him doing at 40 years old. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Big difference.
Okay. Got you.
My Tiger Woods story, Sam, is the first time I saw him was at the – I covered him at the Buick Open. You know, he was doing Buick. He was one of their reps. He hit it down 10, a par 5, with out of bounds on the left. And he blasted it out there about 320, but it's a tree line. So he's got trees. He's right of the trees. He didn't want to miss left, so he missed right. But I'm thinking, I get down there first, you know. Yeah, I've been playing golf all my life. I'm going to figure out what Tiger's going to do. And I listen, I'm thinking, he's going to probably take a 5 or 6 iron out, just get it back in the fairway, then wedge it up and get on the green. So I'm looking left back towards the fairway. Tiger gets down there. That sucker looks right, Sam, towards number 5 tee. He takes a 3 iron out. He sends that sucker out about 40 yards towards that tee, and then he brings it back another 200 yards onto the green. I'm like, number one, I didn't even look to the right. In the click of that ball and that fly, I will never forget that.
I actually know the hole that you're talking about, and I tell you what, that's big time to do that.
Yeah,
that
was a slingshot. Yeah, I know you know that. You know Ward Hill.
Absolutely.
Well, my story with that scenario with Tiger was I covered the Greater Milwaukee Open and back there, and I did it in 94. So I had my radio show at the time. So then a couple years later, my show's off, and then guess who makes their debut as a pro in Milwaukee? Tiger
Hello World.
Yep. Hello World, right. That was the Greater Milwaukee Open, but I didn't cover that one. So I really regretted that, but, you know, it was just a weird circumstance. But, yeah, that will always be the place where he started his pro career in Milwaukee.
But to me, the Masters also signifies something bigger because if just from the last week alone in collegiate golf, it shows me that things are coming. I mean, if you look at professional golf last week, like on the web.com, you see Cameron Champ, Joseph Bramlett, and Tim O'Neill all played in the same event, all made the cut, and they all played really, really well. I mean, that's last week alone.
Wow.
You know, if you look at collegiate golf right now, you look at guys like Marcus Byrd at Middle Tennessee. You know, Marcus has a 71 scoring average. You look at guys like Chase Johnson at Kent State, who's actually a senior. He has a 71 scoring average. Then you look at guys like Sebastian Crampton at Cal. You know, Sebastian finished third last week at 8 on the par. I mean, there are some great things happening right now. And I think, you know, a lot has been missed because Tiger has been gone. But I tell you what, under the surface, things have still been percolating. I mean, people are still getting better. Neighborhoods are still trying to produce good talent. But, you know, also it was also interesting when you think of the Masters, this just came out, actually. Some of the NCAA diversity stats came out, which I think also shows why there's not as many minorities out there, as many blacks on the tour. I mean, we basically, in golf, we make up less than 2% of the golfers out there in college golf.
Wow.
So when you start looking at the numbers right there, I mean, and in 2016-17, we literally made up 1.9% in male and 1.8% in female. And that's including the HBCUs.
Exactly.
If you take the HBCUs out, we make up less than 1% of NCAA golf.
Mm-hmm.
So when
crazy.
I tell you last week, and you had, and I didn't even mention Harold Varner, who's playing well. So when I tell you what 4 or 5 guys that are playing well as professionals, not including guys like Willie Mack, who's already qualified for the Latin American Tour, and some of those young guys trying to still scrape up through some of the mini tour ranks, I mean, we're doing okay. I mean, based on our numbers, we're doing okay. You know, we have a long way to go.
Yeah.
But I think we're representing according to the numbers.
And Sam, I want us to talk about the work you're doing to help get some of these young people out there today. You're traveling all over the world with your program. Can you talk to us a little bit about what's going on with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm traveling all over the world. I mean, I've done a ton of Asia. I actually just inked. I'll be in Uganda in September. And right now, I mean, really trying to – I mean, the Ugandans are really serious about trying to get students here to the U.S. playing, you know, collegiate golf. Been trying to speak some to the Kenyans. We've been some meetings with some people in Nairobi. So I'm literally going all over the place. I've just had conversations about doing Latin America in the fall. I'm doing everything I can right now to basically diversify collegiate golf and get people around the world so that it's representative of the world.
So, Sam, when you first picked up a golf club, did you fathom doing something like this, going around the world like this and showing people the game? I mean, this
has got to be a dream
come true right now.
It's a dream come true, but, you know, it's funny. My mom still says to this day, she said at 12 years old, I came in the house one day and said, hey, one day I'm going to make the game look like those of us that play it. She said I told her that at 12. Now, I had no idea what that would look like at 47, but that tells you what my mind was thinking at 12 years old. So I'm excited. I've been extremely blessed, but I'm really excited about what's transpiring right now. But I still feel like I still have a knapsack on my back. I'm still trying to go, hey, I'm trying to do hard work. I got my hard hat and my lunchbox. I'm trying to go change the game.
All right.
Hey, Sam, I know you're a big fan of Cameron Champ's game. And
absolutely.
Who should we watch on the ladies' side? I know Mariah Stackhouse made a big noise her senior year at Stanford, leading them to a national title. And now she's in her second year on the LPGA Tour. And you got Cheyenne Woods and a couple of others. Cheyenne Woods is Tiger's cousin.
Yep.
Who should we keep our eyes out for?
Well, I'll tell you what, you have a young lady out. We had her in Phoenix in January, Amira Alexander. She's doing really well. She's continuing to improve. She has some conditional status on one of the mini tours. Also, one of the Abe young ladies, her name, last name is Abe. She played at Alabama. She's, you know, she just missed out of Q school in the fall, but she's a really good player. I mean, there are a few girls coming. You know, you just had your one just graduate from Wake Forest. So you have one. There's some of them are coming, and some of the junior programs, I think, junior organizations are doing a really good job trying to at least introduce and acclimate them to what's out there. But your handful of strongest ones you've already mentioned, from Amira to Mariah, I think to the Abe to Cheyenne, definitely number one, be at the top of that list. I mean, those are probably your top four or five right now. And then you have your non-traditional ones, like the young lady who was one of the long driving contestants was signed with Mariah's agent, and she's trying to get out on the LPGA Tour right now. So it's coming. I mean, golf is becoming incredible. I mean, look at Dustin Johnson. Look at Tiger. Golf is becoming incredibly athletic, and I think that's really helping a lot of blacks. I mean, the game is changing. A lot of these people that are playing now are really athletic. It doesn't have the same stereotype that it used to have.
So, Sam, is Michelle
what is it like? Go ahead, Mike.
No, I said, is Michelle Wheat still relevant? Michelle
Wheat. Yeah, absolutely. She's incredible. I mean,
yeah,
she's crazy. Not only is she, absolutely. Not only is she still relevant, but I still think for her, the best is yet to come. She's so athletic.
Yeah.
She's so tall. She's so strong. And she has an incredible golf IQ. And I think I would not be surprised to see her win 10, 15 more times. Easily.
Huh. Yeah.
Because she's that talented.
And she's still young.
I think
she just won a couple of weeks ago. Two or three weeks ago she just won.
That's exactly right.
What is it like being a black man in the coaching aspect of a sport that's a white sport? I mean, it used to be back in the day at the Masters, all the caddies were black. In fact, Clipper Roberts said, I want all my caddies black and all my players white. That's what the man said.
Right. The caddies
are practically gone. And you got to be one of the few brothers out there doing what you're doing. How does that work for you? It's tough, man.
I'm not going to lie. There are days I sit down on the couch and close my eyes and say, man, I feel like I'm in this by myself. It's like I jump in the middle of the ocean and I'm swimming. I can't see land any direction I turn. But, you know, but at the same time, when I open my eyes, I say to myself, but I'm still swimming. And so as long as I know I'm swimming, as long as I know I'm in the water, I know I have to just keep paddling. When I get tired, I dog paddle. when I catch my breath, I start swimming as hard as I can again. And it's tough. It really is tough, because what you find is, and basketball is the best example of this, coaches tend to recruit those that resemble their own inner reflections. So if there are no black coaches actually looking, because they can't relate. So they have to be, young black kids have to be, you know, oftentimes we were told you have to be two times as good as or better. Well, I think in golf, honestly, unlike basketball, football, I think you almost have to be 5 to 10 times as good. When I mention all these kids I'm naming, from Joseph Bramlett to Cameron Champ to Sebastian Crampton, all of these guys weren't just good golfers in college. They were great golfers. You got to be a great golfer. I mean, if they had been just good, they wouldn't have got recruited at these type of institutions. I mean, if you think about a guy like Tim O'Neill, I just said those guys have to be 5 to 10 times. Tim had to be 25 times as good. He came out of a black college.
Coming out of Jackson. Coming out of Jackson.
I mean,
State.
Think about this. Think about coming out of Jackson State. He had to be that much better, 20 to 25 times, Willie Mack. And, of course, Willie had a chance to play at bigger school. Hell, I offered Willie a scholarship to come back up to Michigan State. But Willie chose to stay where he was, and you just have to be 20 to 25 times as good as. It's tough out here, man. But I don't like excuses. To me, excuses are tools of the incompetent, which be a monument to nothing. And those that specialize in them seldom succeed in anything else. I don't make excuses. If that's what your dream is and you want to go out there and dream, then you have to keep working. You just got to keep working, because they dreams do come true.
I know. I listen to all this, man. When you hear this man talk, you know why he is a championship coach and a builder and a leader of young people. That's great stuff, Sam. So what as we head towards spring, heading towards the summer, what are some of the stuff, some of the things you're going to be doing in the States?
Well, you know the coach.
And
is right
any, and where can you people contact you?
Can give you, you can give them my cell or you can give them my email address, either one. But, yeah, right now is a lot of fun, because right now I'm setting up. I have Nike camps going on this summer, two in Charlotte, two in Winston-Salem. I'm doing one of the short game camps down at Duke this summer with John Woodhouse, one of the Duke assistants. And so I got a ton of camps. Actually, I have a couple other camps in different parts of the United States. I'm doing another camp with Andy Walker. We're going to do that in right before September. We did a huge one in Phoenix in January. So I'm going to do a ton of camps and continue to travel and spread the word.
Hey, as you know, we got some golfers listening to this show. Some of my buddies are golfers listening to this show. What would you give them to start working on as we get ready to head into the season? Now, Sam, don't give them too much, because some of these guys are my buddies. I don't want them to get too good.
Well, I tell you, if I were heading into the season right now, if I were in some cold weather places, I would automatically start like golf used to be taught 40 years ago. I would start inside out instead of outside in. Instead of running to the range to beat balls and start hitting drivers and figuring out why your 5-iron is going sideways, I would get around that chipping green. I would make sure that I'm hitting that chip shot. I'm focusing on my pitches, my bunker shots. I would work on my speed control with my putting. I would work on my distances with my irons. Then I would work my way back to the range, focusing on the basic stuff, on tempo, proper setup in the basics. That's where I would start.
All right, so hold on, fellas. So all my boys out there, make sure y'all go get y'all's drivers out. Don't worry about it. Don't pay no attention to what Sam said. Go get your drivers and keep hitting them all spring.
And keep hitting them all in the room.
Go ahead, Mike.
All right, I was going to say, digressing back to what you said about a player having to have 25 times more activity coming out of HBCU. Now, say the same player is being recruited. Is it better for them to somehow end up at Stanford? Would that increase their chances? Or is it just being African-American, you still got to do 25 times as much, whether you come out of HBCU or or a high-regarded place like Stanford for tennis, golf for me.
Yeah,
sorry.
I don't care where you come out of. You're going to have to golf your ball, and the numbers will speak for themselves. But you have to
right.
you have to put numbers up. You're going to – I mean, that's just the bottom line. I mean, I just – the guys that I named earlier, they all have stroke averages better than 72. I mean, think about that.
Right.
And that's including competitive golf. I mean, you're playing three rounds a tournament, and yet they've played all season long, two semesters, and they all have stroke averages better than 72, which includes top three, top five finishes. You have to be able to put the ball in the hole. So if I were a young person right now looking for a university, I would be looking for a couple things. One, I'd be looking for a coach that has kind of been there and done it. You know, a lot of people talk about winning. You go on a recruiting trip, and a lot of coaches will say, hey, if you come here, we're going to win. Well, wait a minute. You've never won. So you can take a chance. All right? So if that's the case, then you also sit back and say, I'd also look for a program programmatically which has access to nice practice facilities, courses, and access to where you can get on the golf course and practice. And then I would also want to pick a school where at some point your coach, if he's knowledgeable, that he can potentially help you. And yet the flip side is, even if he doesn't know much about golf, but he's willing and able to allow you to get with somebody locally who's fantastic, then that's just as good. But you don't want a guy that you go and he says, well, I have to be your golf instructor. Well, I would probably run away from that guy. Because I'm going to tell you right now, the best programs in the country don't operate like that. And I would recruits all the time. I would tell recruits all the time, if I figured out who the schools are coming down to, and I would say, hey, you're going to go to a school, the guy's going to talk about winning. You come play for me. I've done this 12 years. I have 6 rings. My jury in my jury box on my wall proves that I've won. Winning begets winning.
And Sam, tell me this. As a black coach, when you walk in the door, do you ever get the side eye? Like, wait a minute.
Oh, when I walk in the door, sometimes they look back at the piece of paper and they try to say, well, wait a minute. What was the name? Perrier? And then they look at the face because Perrier didn't register with a black person.
Right.
Yeah.
The two weren't parallel. So, and to me, that's always I love it. I love that look. I love that smile.
Right. Right.
Because
you know
you're
gonna get them.
You better believe. And the smart families realize at the end of the day, if they want their children to have that success and make it, then it doesn't matter what I look like, because I'm a proven winner.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, on the flip side, how's it like when you go into a black family's home?
You want to hear something
pride
funny?
Do they have? Yeah.
You want to hear something funny? They look at me as to say, should we really play for a black?
Wow. That goes back to some of the stuff my mood was talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
It's unbelievable, man. I could tell you a couple stories about one of the guys. I won't do it. I won't put it out on the national air like that. But they look at me and say, well, do you really? If I'm black, but if I play for a black coach, how would that look?
Oh, wow.
And I laugh about it. But you know who, I'll tell you who really takes well to me are foreigners. Because coming from their environments, it's not about black and white.
Right.
In some of those countries, it's about Protestants and Catholics.
Right.
And so they see you see themselves. They see you as they see themselves.
Wow.
But you know what?
Wow.
Not only that, you worked at Eastlake. I mean, and to our listeners out there who aren't familiar, Eastlake Country Club is one of the premier country clubs in America, in the world. This is
absolutely
the home
in the world,
of Bobby Jones back in the day before Augusta National. And did they try to check your badge when you came on the property, man?
I tell you, I've had some funny stories at Eastlake. I was told, hey, boy, when you get a chance, go get my spot 45. So I would laugh. And I would say, I tell you what, I'll be happy to get your car, but when I get mine out of spot 46, we drive them together. You know, they would laugh, stuff like that. You know, I always made a joke out of, hey, I had one guy one day, which is pretty funny. One guy asked me one day, he said, hey, are you the new cook? And I would say, no, I tell you what, I do look like him. I said, but God, you know what? You look familiar. Are you the new server? You know, that was how I dealt with it. That was how I dealt with it. It was funny, but I mean, to me, I had sometimes you gotta. I always met the negative with laughter, and that kept me from crying. Because sometimes you sit back and shake your head like, man, what in the world?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you, of all the sports today that I'm familiar with, having covered and golf, been involved with all my life, golf for black people, that is still the racist tendencies it seems like they just can't help but come out in some of these people. they just seem so caught off guard by you being there that it just throws them off. And a lot of times they don't even know what to do, fam.
But you want to hear something funny, though? That's why I love golf, because my dad always told me, he said, once you put the ball on the peg, he said, the only thing that matters is hitting that ball. He said, and the ball only has one color, but it has one destination, in the hole. It doesn't matter what I look like.
That's a good one. Absolutely.
And so for me, that's the one thing I love about golf, because I'm able to differentiate all differences once I get on the golf course, and at the same time, we're all the same. I mean, I tell you, some of the people I played with, like I know you guys have, it doesn't matter how much money they had, how famous they were, what they did in government, how many stripes they had on their uniform. When we tee that ball up, we're the same.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Unless you're the current president, because he cheats when he plays golf. He cheats at everything else, man.
That's funny.
Well, look, we're gonna let you go, Sam. We're gonna close this thing down. Hey, but what's your prediction for this week? You can give me a couple of names to look out for.
Well, I would tell you the names I've been tossing around this week. I wouldn't be surprised to see Stenson play well, Bubba, Tiger, Mickelson. Those would be some that I would just jump out at me instantly.
Yeah, Henry Stenson's a heck of a player.
Well, but I love him because this guy hits the irons. Oh my God, his ball strike on irons is amazing.
Yeah,
it's absolutely amazing watching him hit the iron.
Yeah, he is. He's like a machine. He hits that 3-wood too, man. He can just pound it out there. Yeah, so it's going to be a great week. But Sam, we really appreciate you checking in and giving us an update on the world of golf. And this has been a great show. We've had two legendary figures for sports tonight. NBA legend Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf and golf legend, still legend in the making, Coach Sam Perrier. Sam, thank you very much, my brother. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, guys. I love what you guys are doing, man. We need you. We need you. So please continue to keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Appreciate
you
that.
You know, man, and keep checking in with us. We'll talk to you around the U.S. Open and get
Sounds
your thoughts
good.
On that.
Sounds
All
good.
All right.
All right.
Well, Mike, this has been a heck of a show, man.
Absolutely.
I want to thank our guest, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, and I want to thank Sam Perrier. I want to thank our listeners from all over the country checking in and those who are sending texts. We appreciate you in regard to that. And we're going to try to repost this interview tonight and get it up on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website. Check out our friend Robert T. Green Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time at our Facebook page, the African American Athlete Facebook page. And you can get that page at FAMS, AFAMATH. So this is Ricky Hansen and Michael Robinson. checking out for the evening. We appreciate you checking in with us, and we'll see you next week. Good night, and God bless.
All right, peace, and yo.